welcome to another edition of the SmackDown Summary. And yes, you are hearing my voice again. It's Kenny McIntosh because I am bleeding over onto every show we do.
You just can't stay away, can you?
I can. I just love me some SmackDown. And sadly, well, not sadly, in lovely news...
It's not like he died too.
Yeah, that... No, he didn't. He is alive, but Robert is starting his new job at school, so he's got a lot of stuff to do, preparation. If he's going to teach the youth of tomorrow, he needs to be prepared. So that leaves me to fill in with the lovely, voluptuous American that is Sondra. Hi,
hello.
Sondra. So this is episode number 3 of the SmackDown Summary. Third show. Post-brand split. So I guess we'll see how they go. So we'll just get straight into it. But obviously, before we do get straight into it, 7 Days, 7 Podcasts is coming back.
Get excited.
Get excited.
You'll be hearing plenty of Kenny, plenty of me, plenty of other rotating people in and out. It's going to be like a big party.
Exactly. We're going to have so much stuff. We have interviews planned. We're going to have Sondra and I are going to do an NXT sort of like month catch-up thing where we get you ready for Brooklyn on Saturday. There's some surprises coming, some guests. So yeah, it should be a lot of fun. So we'll be back tomorrow with the main show. And then we'll have the Raw Rundown, SmackDown Summary, look back at previous SummerSlams, previews, all that good stuff. So keep an eye out for all that. So, SmackDown opens up with Randy Orton backstage. He's got a main event with Del Rio. Alberto Del Rio is still on SmackDown. and Orton just kind of does this interview about, you know, it only takes one RKO to get to Viperville.
Stop trying to make Viperville a thing. It's not a thing. I don't know why it's getting under my skin so much, but it is.
I think it's because they are really trying to make it a thing.
I mean, if I have to choose between Viperville and Del Rio's Tree of Woe double stomp, I'll choose Viperville, but I won't be happy about it.
Exactly. So basically the gist of the interview is that Del Rio and him are talking, and Orton offers him a VIP experience, but it's a bumpy ride in Viperville, and Del Rio just threatens to break his arm off, which I thought was excellent.
And good, because it means he's not going for the Tree of Woe double stomp. Super appreciate that.
Which is always good. We are joined, as always, by Mauro Ranallo, JBL, and one of the worst commentators of all time because he's so bland, David Otunga.
For everyone complaining about Byron Saxton, just think about how bad David Otunga is here. And granted, David Otunga has not been doing this very long, but oh boy, for a while I forgot he was on this show until he was like, hey, I was in the Nexus with Daniel Bryan, and I was like, oh wait, yes you were, so points to you. And you're still on the show? They didn't just unplug your microphone? Because I couldn't tell.
Pretty much. Bray Wyatt opens the show. He's got Eric Rowan with him. They kind of bang on a bit. They call Ziggler desperate. And, you know, the gist of it is basically that no matter what Ziggler does, he can never kill a god like Wyatt. Then Ambrose comes out. Ambrose kind of knocks him for all of his kind of mumble jumble in his promos, and then Ziggler comes out and basically all turns into a big fight, and in the end Ziggler ends up trying to super kick Wyatt, ends up super kicking Ambrose, and there's dissension between two opponents at SummerSlam, which obviously means that we are going to see more of that later on, because then it's a tag team match of Ziggler and Ambrose against Rowan and Wyatt. Did you know, Sondra, a weird fact, that Bray Wyatt didn't have a match at WrestleMania and isn't going to have a match at SummerSlam? It's quite weird.
That is weird, isn't it? I hadn't really thought about it that way, but yeah. Yeah, I really hope what happened at WrestleMania doesn't happen at SummerSlam, fuck's sake. That was no good. That was no good at all. Like, this whole opening segment thing, I enjoyed it for what it was, I guess. Like, it wasn't anything that exciting. I still get taken in by Bray Wyatt, though. And I think maybe that's an issue. Like, maybe I need to just stop being taken in by Bray Wyatt, because it's like he just lures me into hope that, oh, maybe you are important. Like, he specifically called out the fact that Dolph Ziggler had to ram his head into a turnbuckle to beat him, right? And I was like, oh, that's an excellent thing to point out, because that is true. It's not like Bray Wyatt just lost and got pinned off of a super kick. It was a super kick after his head was into a turnbuckle, right? Which, I mean, you'd think that, yeah, so we're still trying to protect Bray Wyatt a little bit. That's cool. I appreciate that, because Bray Wyatt is one of my favorites. I mean, it doesn't really work out all that well in the end, but I'm still being taken in by Bray Wyatt, and I kind of wish that I weren't, but I do still kind of love him. Kind of a lot. And also, I love his white dreadlock.
Yeah, I do love it. I do love his random Whoopi Goldberg dreadlock that he has.
It's great.
But I think the thing with Bray Wyatt is Bray Wyatt has never stopped being a compelling character. It's the fact that either the material doesn't add up to what he does, or, you know, like, he, like, I mean, again, I mean, I know you and I are going to differ to this to the end of time, but I still think he could have done the Rock thing at WrestleMania the exact same way, and I think the Rock and Cena thing was cool. It's not for me, but I think it's cool overall. But I think the key thing was that the Wyatts had to attack the Rock. That's what had to happen. And, you know, I think when things like that don't happen, he does just become a kind of guy that talks and talks and talks and is not able to back it up, or doesn't, or like what he does doesn't match up with what he says.
I think I came to the realization this week that Bray Wyatt's purpose is not what I want Bray Wyatt's purpose to be. And I realized that it's very much like when Tyler Breeze in NXT would get number one contender shots, and he would get title matches, and he would get all these, like, he would get these opportunities to do this really, really cool stuff. He's going to face Jushin Thunder Liger. He's going to do all this awesome, you know, stuff. And I want Tyler Breeze to be the top guy, right? Because I think Tyler Breeze is amazing, but that's just not what they see for him. Yeah. And I think it might be that same situation with Bray Wyatt right now. Like, he's super valuable. He's super important. They can use him to tell these stories. They can use him, like, in very key roles in the main event scene. I mean, he's not, like, falling down the card necessarily. He's in the main event scene right now. He's not one of the one contender. Like, he's not a number one contender, but he's mixing it up with the number one contenders, right? And the champion. And so he's in the main event scene, but he's just not the guy that they're going with. And I think that's something that I might be working through my stages of Wyatt grief. And maybe I'm settling on acceptance and moving forward and trying to have a new outlook on things. We'll see how I feel next week. It could change. But
like you say, at least he is involved.
Yeah.
In a kind of top angle. And then obviously backstage when Ziggler and Ambrose are sort of, you know, bickering, and Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon came in, something I thought was interesting was that they make the tag team match, and then Daniel Bryan makes the point of turning to Ziggler and saying, oh, what was it you said last week? Screw you. And they walk off. And I just found that line, for whatever reason, very bizarre. That Daniel Bryan, the most likable man on earth, was scripted to do this kind of, like, really weird, like, kind of authority heel line. Was it just me that kind of thought it was a bit weird?
I think the context of it wasn't so jarring. I can't remember exactly what he said. It's been a while since I watched SmackDown. But wasn't it something like, if you don't win, or if you don't like it, like, this is what you're going to have to do?
It's if you don't like it.
If you don't like it. Oh, what was it said? And, I mean, it kind of made sense to me coming from Daniel Bryan, because Dolph Ziggler was overly harsh to them. And also, Dolph Ziggler's an asshole who, you know, maybe I just enjoy Daniel Bryan telling Dolph Ziggler, screw you. Maybe that's it. That could be 100% the case. But
I think it probably is the case.
It also kind of fits with Daniel Bryan, though. Like, I don't know. Have you been watching Talking Smack? I don't remember. We haven't really talked about SmackDown very much, like, personally.
I've watched pieces of it, but I've not watched the full thing. But he is very good on it.
He's very, very good on it. And he is. And, I mean, watching him on Total Divas and upcoming Total Bellas, like, I'm so excited. Daniel Bryan can be kind of sarcastic, and that, I guess, for me, like, knowing Daniel Bryan as a whole, and really he kind of comes off like Daniel Bryan the guy, especially in Talking Smack. Like, he talks some smack on that show. I love it. Like, I recommend that to everybody.
He absolutely does. I just think that, and I'm not overplaying it, I'm not saying that it's, like, you know, ruined the show or anything, but it just felt for me like I didn't feel that Daniel Bryan would say that line.
That's fair. I don't know that, you know, the most likable guy in the world should necessarily be saying that line.
Yeah, it just, it, you know, I really like that he seems to be like the guy that's in the position to help us, the fans. You know, like he's there to be like, we deserve tag titles for this show, but we're not going to do it straight away. We're going to do it when we're ready and all this. You know, he's doing the stuff that we want him to do. And I felt like that line was something more that was designed for him to say rather than something he would say.
Is
But
it, I
like I
mean, this
say,
could be reading too much into it. Is it an indication that maybe Dolph Ziggler is not so in line with the fans anymore?
maybe it's kind of an indication of a
Maybe is
heel
it like a
turn.
hint?
Yeah, maybe. And if it is, then I guess, you know, points for sort of putting it in the mind.
I kind of like the slow build of it, if that's where we're going.
Yeah, I love a bit of slow build. So American Alpha, they are back on SmackDown once again in an enhancement squash match, which is tremendous. Mikey O'Shea and Mike Vega,
A
who
Tale of
looked
Two Mikeys.
a tale of two Mikeys, who both look, one just looked appalling,
Who are
and
too
the other,
big to face Braun Strowman on Raw.
yeah, he just looked wide as the Clyde. So they have this kind of, you know, it's a standard squash match, which is fine. But the thing that's funny is, before the match can kind of start, the Ascension come out, the Vaudevillains come out, and then the Hype Bros come out. So basically, this is the tag team division as of now. It's American Alpha, the Vaudevillains, Hype Bros, and the Ascension.
I have one, well, I have a number of problems with this segment.
You know, of the whole show, I remember watching it just going, oh God, she's gonna really hate that.
I don't have it in me to deliver quite the rant that I did during the women's promo train of episode one of SmackDown Live.
What is still, I think we're gonna play that back on a best of the end of the year thing. It's one of my favorite
I'm pretty proud of that one, actually.
things.
But can you guess the biggest problem that I had with this segment?
I mean, one problem I had with it, I don't know if this would be your one, was that. Now I don't think this is gonna be your one, but like I really kind of like I like what they've done with Zack Ryder the last couple of months, but there's been no explanation that he's now in Hype Bros again, and he just kind of came out with Mojo Rawley, and I was like, oh, so they're now Hype Bros again.
I think wasn't the explanation Mojo Rawley attacking Alexander Rusev to defend Zack Ryder's honor.
Oh yeah, still a shit explanation though,
Well, no,
really.
it's bad, but it's something.
It's
No, that's not
something.
my biggest problem.
Was it the Vaudevillains coming out in the middle?
Nope. Who's missing?
Who the fuck is missing?
There's a notable omission here.
It's not the Wyatts because they're not a proper tag team. Who's on SmackDown that I am not thinking of?
Super good looking everywhere in
Oh,
place.
Breeze Angle for
Yep.
Breeze. You know, I'm not a huge fan of them as a team, but see if you can fucking chuck those other three teams out, may as well chuck them out too.
I mean, you
Like,
cannot tell me that Tyler Breeze and Fandango are lower in the ranking than the Ascension.
I would never try to fight that. I would never try and argue that.
And at first I thought, oh, are they on the Australian tour? But they're on Main Event this week.
So they
So
were
no,
not
they were
main
not
event.
on the Australian tour because the Hype Bros beat them on Main Event. So where are they? Because they are an established tag team. They are a proper tag team. And I mean, even if you follow Tyler Breeze on Twitter, whenever like often when the Revival will, talk shit and be like, we're the best tag team, da 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 da, Tyler Breeze will tweet at them, oh, prove it. Like, what about Breezango? They're very much a tag team. And
Yeah.
commentary is saying, oh, look, this is the entire tag team division of SmackDown. Oh, God help us on SmackDown if this is our entire tag team division. And it didn't do any favors to the entire quote unquote tag team division when, I mean, first of all, the American Alpha has already beaten the Vaudevillains, so it's kind of weird to go from like beating the Vaudevillains to an enhancement match, but I love me a good squash, so it's fine. I'm not gonna complain about that. But it doesn't do much for any sort of real competition when American Alpha takes what, 30 seconds to just roll everybody out of the ring? I mean, are we supposed to think that there's any competition? I understand what they're going for on paper here is to get American Alpha to kind of continue what they said on Talking Smack last week and say we're trying to light a fire under the tag team division and we're trying to establish ourselves as the best and we're trying to establish ourselves as dominant. Well, it didn't take very long. Where's the drama? Like, there's no drama here at all. All we see are just some hapless tag teams that apparently can't do anything. I mean, are we waiting for the Uso to get healed so that the Uso can come back and, like, make things interesting? Because good luck there. It's an Uso.
Oh, that was good. I enjoyed that. I mean, to be fair, we are at a point where I actually really want the Usos to come back as heels, like, because it's probably the most interesting thing.
As heels, please let it be as heels. Please let it be as heels.
But, like, yeah, I mean, so obviously if you've not seen SmackDown, you're just kind of listening to this. After the match, which the American Alpha won, spoiler.
They beat the mics.
Big brawl breaks out with all the tag teams, comes down to American Alpha and the Vaudevillains, and Gable and Jordan stand tall at the end, so that's kind of what we got. But I want to talk about one of my favourite parts of SmackDown. One of my
the favorite best part of SmackDown.
Eva Marie.
Fucking hell.
She's about to face off against Becky Lynch. She comes out with her grand ring entrance that she has, the bell rings, and she has a wardrobe malfunction.
A wardrobe malfunction, which can only happen by reaching up and untying that gear.
This is true.
Like, there's no way that, like, her boob didn't pop out, which would be very likely in that gear. Didn't I say that a couple weeks ago? I think I might have said it with Robert when
you did.
We had the women's promo train or whatever. I was like, that gear is not going to hold up. And so the fact that there was a wardrobe malfunction on this show without her even moving or doing anything, I cackled so hard.
Well, plus, like, you're the best person to ask this because you have boobs.
I do. So,
like, you know how one falls out or not.
Yeah.
So.
Trust me, they move around. Like, I don't understand why so many female wrestlers have boob implants because, like, large boobs, because my boobs are fairly big, right? Like, they're not conducive to movement and being contained.
And that's only going to get worse as the years go on. It's not going to get better. Unless, yeah, I mean, so they become more sturdy?
You broke up there. Like,
is the reason that women in wrestling get breast implants that maybe the breasts become
more sturdy? Like
you know, like China's, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on the type of implant. I mean, the saline implants, actually, they don't get so rigid like some of the older, like, silicone ones did.
Right, okay. Because China's never seemed to move at any
point. No. I mean, and it depends. Yeah, I mean, there are different procedures now, which are better.
The thing is, I could not have had this conversation with Robert with anyone. Oh, my God. Listen to them just talking about tits.
I have experience with tits. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm stuck with them. They're not going
away. You podcast with a couple of them as well. So.
Well, there is that, too.
But, yeah, so fair play to the referee here. The referee does get a towel. It helps Eva Marie cover up, and she leaves. So Eva can't compete, obviously. Becky's raging. Becky says she's prepared to fight anyway. Yes, she's an open challenge. And out comes Alexa Bliss. And then the match kind of starts. And then Eva Marie's music hits, and she comes out saying that she's now ready to compete. And that's just a distraction for Becky to be rolled up and pinned by Alexa Bliss. And Eva did say, though, she will be making her debut next week.
Her spectacular debut.
Her spectacular debut. it's so awful and it's so great at the same time.
I just love the voiceover. Eva Marie is now ready to compete. So let me once again introduce you to the... And, like, as much as I hate the distraction roll-up, I hate being distracted by music, I hate all of that... In this case, in this instance, the way this story is playing out, I think it actually works. Because it's not just someone's entrance music distracting you. It's the fact that, like, no, this bitch untied her gear. Which, I mean, Becky Lynch watched her do it because she was standing right across the ring from her, right? Mm-hmm. So Becky Lynch saw the shenanigans that the camera didn't show us. Becky Lynch knows this is bullshit. So for Becky Lynch to hear... And now she's ready to compete. When Becky was like, I just want to fight. I just want to have a match. She's like, oh, for fuck's sake. What? Even, like, I am already in a match. what is going on? And she's already exasperated with Eva to begin with. Because clearly this is Eva's doing. It's not just like, you know, it's not your standard distraction by music. And as much as I'm inclined to want to hate it just based on the whole distraction by music roll up, whatever. But it wasn't even a distraction roll up. It was a distraction that allowed Alexa to hit Becky and then hit Twisted Bliss, her finisher, to properly win a match, which I appreciated. So it accomplished multiple things, right? Like, it got Eva Marie over as even more of a spectacular cunt because she's awful. And I just love that about her. It got Becky Lynch, like, it allowed us to see Becky Lynch's fire and her saying, like, no, I am fed up. This is ridiculous. I want to fight. I want to have a match. I want to do this. Because that's what I'm here for, right? Like, I'm a fighter. That's what I want to do. It allowed Alexa Bliss to come out and maybe be a little overconfident in her abilities, but not really. I mean, Alexa Bliss is very good. And so it gave us a chance to see a little bit of what she can do in the ring. And I mean, it wasn't like this was a classic match where you saw everything that she can do, but I thought she looked good. I thought she looked like she could hold her own. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, she was good in what she was designed to do. You know? Yeah. And I think... The thing, Becky Lynch did an interview this week, and I'm trying to find where it was that she did it, because I liked the line that she said. She was talking about the fact that she works on SmackDown, that she actually gets to work with younger women, and women who... It was Scott Fishman at Channel Guide magazine, and she was... Let me just get the quote, actually, because I think it's worth bringing up here. She was asked about Eva Marie, and working with Eva Marie, and she said... I love working with talent like that. It's a challenge for me. I feel it's a great spot for me to be in because I can be a leader. I really enjoy that. I remember when I was coming in and having someone to keep you calm and help you through that helps. Then you build the confidence. It does help because maybe they don't have the confidence at first, but you're able to bring them to a good match. And then they come back and they're really excited. And I love that. So I feel like Becky's, you know, we could look at it negatively and go, well, you know, there's no chance of her having any classic matches here. But there is a chance of her building a division. And if she does, she's going to get the credit for it. So,
and I will say, I've seen Alexa Bliss have some really, really kick-ass matches, particularly with Bayley. But, I mean, also, Alexa Bliss and Carmella actually have really good chemistry. They're not going to be putting on a five-star classic anytime soon, but they have good chemistry and can do a good match together. So I'm excited to see more from her on SmackDown. And I liked the way it made Alexa look like she is absolutely willing to... capitalize on opportunity. Like, I still think a lot of the women are fairly one-dimensional. They're, but that comes with time too. Like, you can't introduce a fully fleshed character in one episode. It doesn't really work that way. And I think they're actually starting to put down some building blocks for this, and I'm starting to like where it's going a little bit more, especially if, you know, we get to see Alexa Bliss being a little bitch. And, you know, she... Part of the issue is that both Alexa Bliss and Carmella, a lot of their character development in NXT had to do with them being valeted to tag teams of men. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that helped to develop their character. So then when they were cut off from those tag teams, we had something to go on and we had something to build on. And now they're kind of starting from scratch. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but there's good stuff there. And I think it'll be cool. And I was much happier seeing Alexa Bliss introduced in this kind of match where she got to look mean and look little and look feisty than just talking.
I'm also, I'm with you on the whole Alexa Bliss thing. I really like her. I like her look. I like the fact that she is, like you say, willing to just like capitalize on anything. But the thing that I'm really interested in is that, from what you hear from Dave Meltzer and other sort of, you know, trusted wrestling sources, their plan long term is for Eva Marie to be a big babyface star. And I just...
Yeah,
that's the long term goal with her. So,
because they had talked about that. Are they still talking about her as a babyface star?
Have you watched Roman Reigns? Like,
well, I have,
but
I mean...
This is a company that's like, they're not... But what I find interesting is I can actually see a way that this entrance stuff will get her over. Now, I don't think that she has it. She's able to back it up in the ring, but I think it's interesting. I'm curious to see her grow because people do despise her because she represents, like, but the clever thing about it, and I think this is, see if you're ever going to try and get Eva Marie over as a babyface one day, I think this is the exact way to do it, is to give her a run as a really good fucking heel for a couple of years.
Oh, she needs to be.
Because one thing she does, and nobody talks about this, the way that she dresses for a match is very, very like the way the divas used to dress.
That's the genius of Eva Marie to me. Yeah, and what I think is so cool about it, because in 2011, 2012, all the women were supposed to look like Eva Marie, right? And I think actually, this is going to maybe be controversial, I don't know, but Eva Marie is kind of indicative of how far we've come in women's wrestling since I started watching wrestling in the past 6 years. Like, Eva Marie now, dressing the way, like, Kelly Kelly did, or whoever, like,
God, that,
you know, whatever, right? Like, Eva Marie dresses that way, and she absolutely represents the model who was hired to be in the ring, can't really hold her own in the ring, but she's hot. So, or at least they'll tell you she's hot, and she'll do fitness covers, and she'll do whatever, and she'll do the media, and like, no, she can't really talk or wrestle or walk to the ring like a human, but she looks good in pictures, and maybe she'll take her clothes off or something, so let's push her, right? That used to be what they did with their big baby face women stars, right? Now Eva Marie's doing it, and it's the heeliest heelish move in the world. That's actually indicative of progress, and I kind of love it.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And, yeah, I love that now somebody dressing like Kelly Kelly gets you heat and gets you over the heel. That's great.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll, you know, this coming week we will talk about Eva Marie's debut.
If it happens, I don't want it to happen. I want this to play out.
I don't want her to debut till at least September. Like, yeah. I want this for a long time. Randy Orton, Alberto Del Rio had a match. You know, the thing I had going into this was my gut says to me, oh God, it's Del Rio versus Orton. But I actually really enjoyed it. And I think it's because they are two kind of relatively big names. And having them kind of in the middle of the show made the show feel a bit more special. I liked that Del Rio was really sort of like, you know, this is supposed to be a sort of a tune-up match for Orton.
Mm-hmm.
And Del Rio had the anger of, like, how dare you make me the tune-up match? Like, how dare you put me in that position?
How dare you take me so lightly?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the great thing about wrestling. That's the whole, like, it's when, like, CM Punk was the TV feud for John Cena before he got to The Miz. And, you know, he brought that up in his DVD. Like, how dare you put me in this position. And I thought it made for a really good match. And obviously, Orton tried to go for the RKO in the end. And before you know it, Orton's taken apart of the announce table. And Del Rio nails Orton with a chair and there's a DQ. And in the end, Orton gets the RKO. But what I liked about it is that I think it did protect Del Rio, because Del Rio was clever enough to roll out, you know, and avoid the RKO. Him hitting Orton with the chair just shows that he wants to cause Orton pain leading up to Brock Lesnar. So I enjoyed the story. I don't know if I've made all that story up in my head, but that's what I
got. No, that's actually what I got from it too. And I thought it was cool because, I mean, there were a lot of shenanigans. It was kind of a, you know, shaky finish thing with Eva and Alexa and Becky or whatever, followed by like another DQ finish or whatever. Didn't really bother me so much because it just kind of felt like Del Rio wasn't so concerned about beating Randy Orton as in winning the match. Because maybe Del Rio feels like, whatever, if I win this match, what does it do for me? But if I hurt Randy Orton out of spite and I take him out before the Beast can get to him, then, like, he has a personal thing against Randy Orton right now. Because Randy Orton was, taking him lightly and treating him badly. So, frustrated Del Rio is a compelling character to me. Like, I would love for Del Rio to be a compelling character with some fire to him. Because that guy can be great. And it's like his soul just dies whenever he comes back to WWE. But I would really love to see him do something good again. And if we can get a frustrated, like, proper heel Del Rio that will do shit like this just out of spite. Just to, you know, try and make himself notice so that he can get more of a spotlight or whatever. I don't know. I enjoyed it. Plus the whole, like, working Orton's arm. When that's the thing that had been injured with Orton, I'm a sucker for working body parts in the first place. Like, I think that just makes for great matches. Those are some of my favorite things.
Yeah, no, it was really good. Yeah, surprisingly good, actually.
Yeah.
Orton's been pretty good since he came back.
He seems like he's having fun.
Yeah, and I, when he's having fun, people have fun watching him.
Yeah.
But when he seems, you know, Seth Rollins told the story in the Jericho podcast about Orton being wary of doing that spot at WrestleMania 31.
Oh, yeah.
The best RKO ever, tied with Evan Bourne. And obviously Orton was kind of playing it safe, but he actually went out of his comfort zone, and it made for one of the most exciting moments of the night. So I was a fan. But then there's a horrendous Miz Scooby-Doo thing, which I refuse to talk about. Do you have anything to say about it?
Bless the Miz for going all in.
That's the best description. But now is the important time. Rhino is backstage. Heath Slater comes in. Heath Slater says he needs the job because he's just bought a pool for his kids.
He has two kids.
And then Rhino talks about, and this must have been quite special for you.
Of course.
Mentions that he just won his primary in Michigan last week.
He did.
And he has constituents to impress. He is Republican, but you know, we'll try and forgive it.
He's across the state. I can't vote for or against him anyway, but...
Would you vote for him because he's Rhino, or would you vote against him because he's Republican?
I would have to look at his actual...
You'd look at his policies, like, if there's any way I can vote for Rhino, I will.
I would. I would look at his policies. I would love to see Baby Rhino in Congress.
So Baby Rhino obviously defeats Heath Slater. Like, there's just no way around it. He's obviously going to go around.
But... Heath Slater gave Rhino more of a fight than you would think, right?
He did, yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching this, but for me, the best part, Rhino obviously wins, stands tall, great, and then Slater throwing a fit backstage to Shane and Daniel Bryan, and then, like, he calls them losers and says he was too good for SmackDown, and then, like, Shane actually had a contract ready.
Well, they were talking about the contract before, and they're, like, because Shane comes to Daniel Bryan and is like, are you sure you want to offer this? And Daniel Bryan says, like... And I'm paraphrasing again, it's been like a good while since I actually watched it, but Heath Slater, he might have lost the match, but he embodies everything that we want to, you know, promote about SmackDown, which I just really, really liked in this little segment, because it was like, okay, we're trying to give SmackDown an identity. We're trying to say that SmackDown is about opportunity and fighting spirit and heart and having fire, like proving yourself or whatever. I can get behind that. And if that's the continuous message that they're kind of trying to push with SmackDown, and it's starting to feel that way a little more, like it feels like a show that's kind of in building block stage where people have to prove themselves and kind of, you know, we're making our own scene here, and it might be a little messy at first, but we're kind of seeing what everyone has. So I liked that they, you know, referenced that again. Like, they're kind of sticking with that as the narrative for SmackDown, which Shane McMahon seems entirely disinterested in because he's a killjoy who doesn't matter, and I don't know why he's here. But Daniel Bryan takes these things seriously and embodies them and is awesome. So that's great. But Daniel Bryan has the contract in hand, and that's when Heath Slater comes in with his tirade. And did you see the fallout, too, where I think it's Charlie Caruso tries to interview him and... He's like, no, I'm going home. I need to, you know, I have 7 kids or whatever that I need to take care of. And
he had procreated more kids in 10 minutes.
Because, I mean, even in the conversation with Rhino, he had 2 kids and a pool. And then he said something because Rhino was like, well, you know, I have to impress my constituents. And Heath Slater's like, my 4 kids are my constituents. I loved everything about the Heath Slater arc in this episode. I think it was fantastic. And, I mean, it was during this match where David Otunga made the Nexus reference, too. Like, why would Daniel Bryan keep giving Heath Slater chances? One of the other commentators, probably JBL, asked because he's a moron. And David Otunga was like, you know, I mean, we were all in Nexus together, so we have a little bit of camaraderie, like, just sort of retconning.
That was David Otunga's best commentary that he has done in the 3 weeks he's been there.
It really was. I appreciate that.
And I don't think David Otunga is bad. I just don't think he's good. That's the problem.
I think, like, David Otunga is very new.
He is very new.
And so he has to work up against JBL.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not going to help you.
But, you know, I really enjoyed the Slater thing. I think that's a key of, like, you can have lower card guys doing funny stuff. Like, here are the two examples. Lower card guy doing funny stuff, he's Slater. Lower card guy doing horrible stuff, R-Truth. So, you know, it's peaks and troughs. Second women's match of the night, or attempt at women's match, Carmella and Natalia. We obviously tried to get it last week, but didn't get it. Surprisingly, Carmella gets the victory. What did you think of this and the debut with Carmella defeating the veteran Natalya?
I liked Natalia's hubris causing her defeat. Because Natalia was just being too cocky, and Natalia was, you know, honestly, Natalia's trash talk, kind of great. And I'm not a big Natalia fan.
Much better here than she's been in the last couple of weeks.
She's a much better heel than she is an attempt at babyface. She's not likable. She might as well just be a dick, right? Like, and I think it was a couple weeks ago, I forget when it was, maybe in her match with Becky on the pay-per-view or something, when she started working trash talk into her matches a little bit more, and she said something to Becky, and I just remember it for some reason, she was like, my cat's better than you at this or something, and she kept like saying bada bing bada boom hottest babe in the room or something, which is totally not the catchphrase of anyone at all, but whatever, bless you Natalia. Like, she was just being shouty and ridiculous, and I don't think she's great at it, but she's doing that Baron Corbin thing where she's just trying stuff and she's just trying to be big and obnoxious, and it's working. It's more compelling than Natalia's been in a very long time, so I appreciate that. I mean, I thought the match was fine. I thought it actually told a pretty decent story. Natalia was fairly dominant, but Carmella had a lot of heart and, you know, kind of kept... It was the most babyface Carmella's looked on SmackDown as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not a huge, huge proponent of Carmella, you know, what I will say is I thought the story of this was good. And, like, if I had just read Carmella beats Natalia, I'd have probably scoffed at it. But they actually did it in a way which I kind of dug. And I actually love Natalia kind of fucking up the impression, you know, because, like, why would you do it right?
It's like Tessa Blanchard going, how are you doing?
Yeah, of course. If you mucking up something that's fun for the fans is exactly what you should be doing.
Yeah, and it worked. Like, I really like the fact that Natalia was too cocky. Like, she could have covered Carmella at, you know, plenty of times, and she just, like, sat on her instead or decided to pose or, like, call out to the crowd. And
well, that's, like, I mean,
that's what gave Carmella the lucky shot to get Natalia down on the ground for the code of silence, so.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the same thing, and this is probably a reference that you're not hugely familiar with, but it's like when Razor Ramon put over the 1-2-3 Kid in his first match in WWF.
Well, I've heard enough about that. Everybody talks about that fucking match.
But, like, I mean, it's funny because you're not going to understand the gravitas of what that was.
Wasn't it basically like James Ellsworth beating, like, Randy Orton?
Yes, essentially. But how great is that? You know,
that's great. That's absolutely great.
Out of nowhere, this guy comes in, he's really skinny. But the point was, Razor Ramon was, it wouldn't surprise me if Natalia had watched some Scott Hall doing that kind of stuff, like, just being a dick, you know, being really cocky, like, I can take my time with this. But in the end, they're too cocky and they get defeated, and I think that's a good story.
I think I like that story. I like that story a lot. I think this did well to establish both women again. Like, was it a match that set my world on fire? No. Now, I have to ask you, because I'm too close to it, right? Okay. Like, I'm too close to knowing Carmella and knowing what she does. Her new opening monologue, I just can't with her new opening monologue that she's trying to do. Like, what even is it?
I think the problem with her new opening monologue is that you've got Enzo, who does his shtick on Raw, and now you have Carmella on SmackDown doing a similar sort of shtick, but it's not kind of anywhere near as good, and I think that's a bit of a jarring thing for some of the audience.
And it's so long.
Yeah, and, like, the thing is, like, with Enzo is, like, Enzo before has had some really awful material, but, like, he just makes it work, no matter what. Like, he just is so good that, like, whatever he says. And with Carmella, like, her opening speech is kind of the thing that I have a problem with in women's wrestling in some ways, is that when it's at its best, when women's wrestling is at its best, it's Sasha Banks or Charlotte. You know, it's great. It's, you know, you believe... Or Bailey when she gets to the promos, like compassion, you know, compelling sort of, you believe what they're saying, right? But with Carmella, I just like with this, with the kind of the promo, I just feel like it's like really put on, really fake, and I don't buy it. And that's the problem for me.
Is this one, because to me, this is just so much worse than her standard opening promo that she did.
Yeah, and I wasn't crazy about the standard one, but I could deal with the standard one.
But the standard one at least had the, like, my name is Carmella, and I am the princess of Staten Island and the most fabulous chick in NXT. Bada bing, yeah. Hottest chick in the ring, how you doing? That's understandable. It's, you know, I can recite that to you. It's fine.
Did?
I did just now. Her new one is just so long. It's like, I'm the moonwalking, trash talking chick, always ready to go. So get your popcorn ready, something, something show. And I'm still talking and I'm still going on and saying something else. And yes, this is from memory because I'm a sad human. But like, I was almost kind of glad Natalia interrupted her again.
Yeah, me too. I'm the same.
I like that Carmella learned from her mistake and turned around and, you know, started wailing on Natalia, which was another good thing to the story. But I don't know. I just had to complain about that opening promo because, like,
at least the promo was the shit thing that happened before the decent story of the match.
Yes.
You know, like, had it been the other way around, I might not be as sort of complimentary about it. But we then got a preview for AJ Styles and John Cena, which was really good.
It was the same promo as last week with video package treatment.
It was. But
which,
like,
I liked the promo last week, so I liked it. I saw some criticism of it online. Like, a lot of people really hated that promo last week, whereas I liked it, so I don't know.
I liked it. I understand the criticisms of it, but I liked it.
I get it, but...
I just like the story of these two, and I'm very intrigued by the match, because I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, me too.
And that's intriguing. And then, like, I feel like somebody was just like, you know what, Kenny?
This was your... I'm surprised this wasn't your favorite part of the show.
But I thought my week had been made with Rusev on Raw and Lana doing the best cake spot I've ever seen in my life. But Baron Corbin just every week makes me like him more and more because we just go backstage and beat up Kalisto.
For no apparent reason other than to just be Baron Corbin and be a dick to Kalisto.
But, you know, he's doing it because Kalisto cost him a shot at the IC title. You know, he's got a reason for it, and he leaves, and then the trainers come to check in Kalisto. So
Kalisto's a lot smaller than Apollo Crews, so.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it, you know, because
of course you did.
Because I hate Kalisto, because he's got no sense of humor, because he blocked me on Twitter. But, which, by the way, I said this on the Raw Rundown, and let me repeat it here. Somebody tweeted me saying, because I know that a lot of people didn't like the Rusev thing on Monday. I did.
Because it was pitch.
I liked it though. I like Rusev, and I like. It's one of those things of like I enjoyed his parts of it so much that I was kind of okay with it, even though Roman Reigns was, you know, Roman Reigns. But somebody
You're blinded by love, my dear.
I'm blinded by love. But somebody had tweeted me saying, "Oh, you know, you're really biased about the fact that you like Rusev, and he's a crap US champion." And then this guy was like. He's not even as good as Kalisto as the US champ. And I was like, wait a fucking minute. I was like, well, let me just say one thing here before I tell you to go fuck yourself. Kalisto was pre-showing and Rusev has main evented Raw. Go fuck yourself. You don't know what you're talking about. plus, Rusev can cut a promo.
He sure
anyone
can.
Anyone ever heard of a promo? If you've not heard of a promo, why don't you type in Kalisto SmackDown promo? And
Kalisto
you can find out about
Lucha thing.
Yeah, find out about Kalisto's Lucha thing that he wants to do. Fucking
He's
idiot.
Not making such a good Lucha thing so far on SmackDown.
Well, he entertained me this week. Thank you, Kalisto, for taking a beating that you deserve. So,
and I like Kalisto a lot more than you do, but Kalisto's a vacuum of boring. At this point, and
he's just—I, you know what—I'd rather they brought back Rey Mysterio because at least Rey Mysterio has some history or personality, at least something about him. Like Kalisto, like I get the idea, but he's still Poundland Rey Mysterio.
That's, at this point, still... they're not doing anything else with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think. I mean, there's hope. There is hope. I don't understand why he's not on Raw for the cruiserweight division because that's where he could actually really shine. Because
maybe
I have a feeling
he'll get drafted.
That... I hope so. And I mean, not because I don't want him on my show. Like, I actually really do like Kalisto a lot. But I just don't understand what he's doing here.
No.
Maybe we'll see with time. But Baron Corbin is just a delightful prick.
He is. He's a great, great prick. Main event time was Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler against the Wyatts. This was fun. Kind of, you know, all over the place and chaotic. But in the end, Ziggler had a superkick on Rowan to get the win. Ambrose and Ziggler managed to keep it together to defeat the Wyatts. They looked to be on the sort of same page until Ambrose gave Ziggler the dirty deeds. Fans chanted yes, and Ambrose kind of grabbed the title and his music hit and we went off the air. I really have been enjoying the Dean Ambrose Dolph Ziggler story. Like, I have. And I just really hope that at SummerSlam it doesn't open the show. It's my big fear.
I think SummerSlam needs a better opening match.
Oh, because you hate Dean Ambrose matches, I forgot.
Yeah, like a lot.
Well, I prefer Dean Ambrose matches to Dean Ambrose podcasts, but
I didn't watch it. I thought I should. Like, part of me almost watched it the other night just because I was like, well, he's my world champion. But then I just began weeping and I couldn't go on. So
I genuinely do think that if you have time, like, just go on to it and watch the last 10 minutes.
Okay, is that where he, like, tells Austin off?
Yeah, the last 10 minutes is where they talk about Lesnar and Austin kind of tries to light a fire under him. So the last 10 minutes are good.
Okay, I might have to check that out then.
But yeah, literally, go on to it, skip to 50 minutes.
Okay.
Go on to the first 50. How did you enjoy the main event?
It was fine. I still...
Is it problematic for you because essentially there's four guys and they're telling a story with the two guys you don't like and using the two guys you do like as the fodder to tell the story?
That is part of it, but the bigger part of it is, you know that I have this thing that always sticks in my craw when two opponents who may be higher up on the card than somebody else but are not a team beat a team.
Right.
I really hate that a lot because I'm a big fan of tag team wrestling and I feel like tag team psychology is very different to normal match psychology, and I feel like it should be different. And I feel like an established team, which Bray Wyatt and Eric Rowan are an established team, or at least part of an established faction, right? Like, they've been working together for a very long time, and Bray Wyatt has been leading Eric Rowan for a very long time. Now, I mean, you can make the case that Eric Rowan is, you know, not as good as the other three, and so maybe he was a hindrance or whatever, but still, their teamwork should be on point. And Ziggler and Dean Ambrose, even if they got along, their teamwork shouldn't really be on point, but they don't get along, and yet they're still beating the Wyatts, and it's just one of those things that always kind of sticks in my craw, and unless they tell a really good story with it, it's kind of like the Divas music distraction or whatever, like, unless you do something really good with it,
yeah,
it's just always going to sour me on it. But, I mean, that said, this was still kind of fun. It was fine. Bray Wyatt didn't get pinned. I appreciated that because that's kind of what Eric Rowan is there for. If you're going to beat the Wyatt family again, because everyone beats the Wyatt family, and I said I was okay with it, but sometimes I have these moments where I'm not okay with it, and this is one of those times because I'm talking about tag stuff. It was fine. I get what they're doing. Dean Ambrose is great at building to matches, right? And I think if I hadn't been through the cycle of Dean Ambrose builds a feud, Dean Ambrose builds to a match, Dean Ambrose builds stuff and seems really interesting. And then, like, if Dean Ambrose never actually had those matches, like, if we could get Dean Ambrose to have, like, a stuntman for matches who could, like, do matches, I would feel very differently about Dean Ambrose. But, unfortunately, Dean Ambrose is Dean Ambrose, and
I think he's done a good job the last couple of weeks. Like, I think that, I know you're not a fan of him, but, like, I think he has, as WWE champion, done a good job on SmackDown. I think that him and Ziggler is a match that people are interested in.
But this is still the build to the match. Like,
true. So maybe he needs to prove you wrong at SummerSlam. And I think if everybody
the closest
SummerSlam,
he's come was versus Triple H at Roadblock. And he was still kind of not super great in that match. That was all Triple H.
Okay, I think he, I don't think it was all Triple H.
No, it wasn't all Triple H. I mean, Dean Ambrose did play a part,
But yeah, no, I get what you mean.
Do you know what I mean, though? Like, it's harsh to say that it was all
Jovovich,
but...
Listen, nobody hates that fucking do-si-do more than me. Like, no, nobody hates that fucking clothesline spot more than me. Like, I just, it doesn't work for me. But that's because I, fundamentally, I want Dean Ambrose to be the Shield Dean Ambrose again. Like, I want him
the
to
Shield
be...
Dean Ambrose who barely wrestled? Because I'd prefer that.
I was more thinking the Shield Dean Ambrose who was a bit of a lunatic, but not like a wacky lunatic.
But if you think about it, how often did Dean Ambrose wrestle in the Shield?
Well, just in the six months, right?
Who were the... Yeah. But, I mean, who were the tag team champions? Who did most of the matches?
It's true. It's true. I take your point.
I'm just saying.
He does have a point to prove. I mean, I think if you look at the whole SummerSlam card, and we'll obviously run it down this coming week, I think Ziggler and Ambrose have the biggest point to prove. You know?
They do, and if they take that SmackDown spirit and decide to prove themselves and do something really, really great, I will love it. Like, I'm always willing to start loving somebody if they do something really, really great, right?
100%.
Because you know that's happened. Like, I've hated lots of... I hated Tyson Kidd for a long time.
True, true. Obviously, on the Raw Rundown, we do an out of 10. You don't like doing that, so I'm not going to ask
not
you.
On this
what did you... Overall summary of thoughts for the SmackDown summary.
I thought this was a pretty good episode. It wasn't anything that was super groundbreaking, but I feel like we're building things. And the women's stuff was a lot better this week, for sure, which means a lot to me. The tag team stuff was wretched. And that also means a lot to me, so I was pretty upset about that. But
can I ask you a question for SmackDown? We had a Twitter message from Andrew
Thank you for reminding me.
Who wanted to ask if you think that SmackDown would benefit from a one-hour extension of the WWE Network. Now, I don't know, and Andrew, if you're listening to this, I don't want to diminish your question in any way, but I think what you're asking is, should SmackDown be 3 hours? Sandra, the floor is yours.
I do not think SmackDown should be 3 hours.
Why?
Barely think SmackDown should be 2 hours at this point. Because SmackDown, and we saw the entire roster surround the ring on episode one, right? We saw, quote-unquote, the entire tag team division surround the ring on this episode that we just discussed. And I don't feel like SmackDown has a deep enough roster at this point to really do even 2 hours. And I was thinking about this actually just before we started recording, and I haven't had time to, like, flesh it out or anything like that, but NXT is 1 hour, right? Mm-hmm. And... No, this isn't me just, like, bringing everything back to NXT, but yes, it kind of is. SmackDown is 2 hours, and I started thinking about the women's divisions and the tag team divisions on SmackDown and NXT. And on NXT, we have how many tag teams right now, right? Like, we have TM61, who I know you hate their name, but they're very good. We have Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. We have the Authors of Pain.
The Revival.
We have our tag team champions, The Revival. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. That's four, right? How many tag teams were in this segment on this episode? Four.
But the difference is that the four... Yeah, the difference is that the four that you mentioned, NXT, are fully formed teams that people care about. But I do think that there's a...
But that's what I mean. For a one-hour show, isn't that a lot more depth than we have for a two-hour show here on SmackDown?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think the problem that you have is that, you know... Triple H has made NXT his E-Fed, you know, regardless of how people want to talk about it, because that is the case. And he doesn't want to get rid of all his talent. But actually, so much of his talent should be on SmackDown.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing about, and that's another thing, too, is that, I mean, when you compare it to NXT, and I think this is actually an interesting discussion, when you compare it to NXT, not only does NXT have a bunch of people that I can name right off the bat, right? Like, in terms of the women's division, too, I know they just kind of gutted the women's division, but we still have Bayley, we still have Asuka, we still have Billie Kay, we still have Peyton Royce, we still have Ember Moon's going to be debuting at TakeOver 2 Electric Boogaloo. we have...
Oh, that should absolutely be the name of it.
But, I mean, and that's five just, like, right off the top of my head. But in the wings, we still have plenty of other people, right? We still have Liv Morgan. We have one Nikki Glenn Cross, who's not even debuted on TV yet. We have you know, a lot of people in waiting, or, you know, we have Aaliyah. There are more women on the official established NXT roster than there are on SmackDown right now, because you have a lot more depth in NXT just because you do have the people in the Performance Center to kind of like boost it up, right? And so I think in terms of roster depth and whatnot, like, that's not something SmackDown has the luxury of. Like, we did see an enhancement match on this show, but it's not someone who was considered, like, you know, in the wings or whatever. Not every enhancement match on NXT is someone who's even signed. That's another thing NXT does differently. So, I mean, the conversations obviously are, it's not completely comparable, but I feel like to even do a 2-hour show with this roster, like, how many times do we see repeat people? We saw the Wyatts and Dolph Ziggler and Dean Ambrose open the show and have confrontation for quite a while, and then they were also the main event. We saw Heath Slater in multiple segments, which was great, and I'm never going to complain about that because it was fantastic. And I want Heath Slater, I want this Heath Slater arc to continue. I'm actually really, really into it. But it just kind of, when you compare it, like I did in my head literally minutes before we started recording, is just kind of when I came up with this. But when you compare the depths of the two shows, NXT is the deeper show with a deeper roster, and they only have to fill an hour a week. Plus, they do a lot more vignettes and backstage stuff on their show, right? So I think that's where SmackDown really needs to find its footing.
The difference as well is, like, to kind of further your point, is that on Raw, there's so much talent that they didn't even need to use Sami Zayn this week.
Well, didn't need to or chose not to for no reason.
But you know what I mean? Like for example...
he was on Superstars, so he was there.
He's like, so he's not in a SummerSlam program, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know a lot of people are annoyed about it, and I love Sami Zayn, but, like, for me, I'd rather that he wasn't in a program than shoved into something that's really meaningless.
It's better this than something that doesn't matter, you're right.
Unless they do some sort of, like, I mean, I still think what you might see is, like, some sort of, like, all-star six-man tag or something at SummerSlam, like maybe, like, Cesaro, Sami Zayn, and somebody against Sheamus.
And SummerSlam being, is SummerSlam 4 hours?
It is.
I figured. Meaning 5 hours, knowing WWE lately?
Of course. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how SmackDown recovers. Because the thing is, once SummerSlam's over, it's only 3 weeks until the SmackDown pay-per-view.
Right.
Which is Backlash.
Very curious to see what they do with that. I think that'll be a really interesting test, won't it? To see if a SmackDown-branded pay-per-view looks different, feels different. Like, how long? Is that one going to be a standard 3 hours? Do you know?
I don't know.
Or I'm intrigued. Shorter?
I have no idea. The thing for me is, like, you by the time you started watching WWE, I think they had pretty much put both the brands on the same shows.
Not entirely.
Well, okay.
Because, like, I saw one draft.
But, like, when they, I mean, I remember when they did, like, brand only pay per views that were, like, completely brand only.
Yeah, the pay per views were definitely joined.
And some of the brand only pay per views were grim. Like, they were really difficult to get through. So I'm intrigued to see, and SmackDown's going to be the one that's got the hardest deal, you know. Like, I mean, I'll be honest, what I would like to see and what I think should happen is if a certain Japanese sensation that lights up my heart wins a championship, I think the next Tuesday Samoa Joe should be debuting on SmackDown, like, immediately.
I think they need it. Great.
So, but I do want to just, if you don't mind, just do a couple of quick plugs before we go.
I do have one more thing to say about the whole 3-hour thing. Mm-hmm. Because this occurred to me also when I saw the question from Andrew, and thank you for your question. I appreciate it. Another reason I don't think SmackDown can fill a 3-hour show is because on Main Event this week, two of the matches were from Raw. Like, two of the matches featured Raw superstars. And before this brand split and before this draft, they announced that Main Event was going to be SmackDown and Superstars was going to be Raw. And they couldn't even fill Main Event this week. So... I think
that's is part of that because of the Australian tour?
Maybe, but John Cena and AJ Styles were really the only notable people who were on the Australian tour from SmackDown. Most people were from Raw.
Or maybe Apollo Crews as well.
Apollo Crews, yeah, but...
It's probably, just those three. Yeah, no, you're right. It's a very, very valid point. And just for my two cents, no, SmackDown should not be a 3-hour show ever.
Plus, look how dire Raw can get at 3 hours sometimes.
This is true. But I want to plug, ladies and gentlemen, because Inside the Ropes Live is back. We are going everywhere. We are bringing the one night only series of shows all across the UK. August the 25th in Glasgow at the Garage. We are bringing Eric Bischoff, the King of Controversy, to Glasgow. We have literally 5 VIP tickets left, and then they are sold out. Get your tickets now. General admission tickets, just £15. £30 if you want to go VIP. Me grilling Eric Bischoff about WCW, being the general manager of Raw, TNA, all that good stuff. It's going to be a brilliant, brilliant night. Then, on October 5th in London, we've put together something that I never thought we'd be able to do. Jim Ross and Jim Cornette together on stage talking the rise of the Attitude Era. This is a very specific show. We're going to start off by talking about the King of the Ring promo from 1996 with Steve Austin, and we're going to finish with WrestleMania 14. How did WWF change from being the family-friendly company that they were to becoming the Attitude Era? Jim Ross and Jim Cornette had a big part in the characters becoming a big deal. I think it'll be interesting, pretty much 20 years later, to hear them talk about those characters and what made them successful. And then we finish on October 9th. Well, I say finish. There's more in the works. But we finish for now on October 9th, Sunday, October 9th, in Manchester with Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is very excited about doing these shows. This is the first time he's going to speak publicly and candidly in a live environment. He's chosen to do it with us. We are very excited about it. He is not a fan of certain things from his WWE run. He is willing to talk about anything. He's not going to bury everything, but we are going to go very deep into the Stardust stuff, the legacy stuff, the dashing stuff, and the sad death of his dad. But we're going to go to everything. So I think that all those three shows, they're all different shows. They're all with different types of people. But you can go to insidetheropes.co.uk for ticket information, all three of those shows, and thank you for all the support of our live shows.
Absolutely, and if you've never been to an Inside the Ropes live show, I can actually attest, having been there in person now, they are so worth it, and they are so cool, and Kenny can tell you that I was literally like jumping up and down after the first one I saw with Paul Heyman, going, I got to see an Inside the Ropes live show. And also Paul Heyman was really cool.
I can confirm that's what she was like.
That's exactly what I was like. So definitely buy tickets, go and tell me stories from the shows, because, you know, they should be really good. I'm so excited for you guys. I'm so excited that you get to do this.
They are going to be fun. They're going to be very, very fun. But you can find Sondra on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. You can find me at Kenny at MC1985. You can get the brand @inside_theropes. We are going to have a very busy SummerSlam week coming up, but it is going to be a lot of fun. So, yeah, Sondra, this is your show, so I'm going to let you sign off and I'm going to shut up.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the SmackDown summary. I hope that, you know, you've enjoyed maybe not so much rantiness. I know the first show was very ranty, but SmackDown's kind of getting a little bit better. Really appreciate that. So, you know, stick with us. I'll be back next week. Kenny will be around. And tune in for 7 Days, 7 Podcasts, you guys. We're gearing up towards SummerSlam, and I'm actually really, really, really excited for, you know, main roster stuff and NXT, because, of course, NXT is still a thing. So, yeah. Bye, everybody.
From Concord, California, comes the most stylish, elegant, bewitching, eternally beguiling, continuously charismatic, and fantastically fascinating woman to appear in this or any arena. Allow yourself to be seduced, enchanted, dazzled, and entranced by All Red Everything herself, Eva Marie!
Not ever!